We'll start the meeting almost on time. And Bob, before Travis, you want to come up and just tell us what's going on today at the Capitol with your bunch? Introduce yourself. I think some of the members have probably already had visits from some of the members.
I think so, actually. Chairman Rukavina and members, thanks for the opportunity to address us today. As Mr. Rukavina said, you've seen several of us today. We're all here at the Capitol, and it's very nice to visit with you, and we appreciate that time. For the record, my name is Travis Johnson. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota State College Student Association. I'm going to keep my comments really brief because I know you have a busy agenda today. But as several of you are aware, over 130 of our students are here at the Capitol today, and we're sharing with you, the legislators, our concerns about higher education. We know this committee has very difficult decisions to make this session, but I want to assure you that our message has and always will be clear and to the point. We believe higher education should be a top priority in keeping the state successful in the past, right now, and in the future years to come. The students in this room with me are the future of Minnesota and the country, and without a sufficient support for higher education, that future looks bleak. As this committee has done in the past, staying mindful of that support will only ensure a better Minnesota. So on behalf of the MSCSA and every student visiting the Capitol today, I appreciate your time and consideration of our concerns. I look forward to future conversations with this committee that will keep higher education a top priority. And thank you for the opportunity just to speak briefly with you today. And if you have any questions, I'm open to stand for them.
Okay, Travis, and I just for the committee members, you are a student at Lake Superior, and Representative Reinert is probably one of your instructors, and we want a critique on how he's doing. Is he doing okay?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to keep this objective as possible. No, he's doing great. He's doing a great job.
I'm sure he is. Representative Reiner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you stole my thunder. I just did want to remind everyone that Travis is a proud product of Lake Superior College.
That's right. Thank you very much. And students, thank you for coming around. I've seen some of you, and for putting the pressure on us to try to do the right things around here. So we appreciate it very much. President Brunix and Travis, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. President, and we're happy to see you here, and hope you're doing well.
Chair Rukavina, it's a great pleasure to be with you, although I'd rather be talking about budget increases than the economic realities that face us all, but it's my great pleasure to be with you, and I want to thank the members of the House and Senate who have sent me cards and wished me well, and I just want to assure you I'm gaining every day, and pending the outcome of this meeting, I hope I'm actually stronger an hour from now. But anyway, it's a great pleasure to be here. I'm joined by university officials who can answer questions that may be beyond my pay grade, and I'm also pleased to announce that Regents Hunter and Ramirez have joined us for this afternoon session and are in the audience. Do you want me to begin with a few preliminary remarks? I have a few things I'd like to say and then leave plenty of time for questions.
President Brunix, you do whatever you want here.
Okay, Chair Rukavina and members of the committee, just want to remind the committee for a few moments that by statute, going back many, many, many years, the University of Minnesota is the state's only research university system and land-grant university. And as such, we have a very unique mission of teaching and learning, research and innovation, and public engagement and outreach. I believe the University of Minnesota plays an absolutely critical role in the economic growth and quality of life of Minnesota. It does so today, it has historically, and it clearly will mean even more for Minnesota's future. We do so in a number of ways, by attracting and supporting talented students, faculty and staff, and even new businesses, by attracting new businesses to Minnesota and keeping them here, by discovering and applying new knowledge and solutions to complex real-world problems, and by substantially leveraging state support by securing outside funding for research, outreach, education, public engagement that clearly advances our economy and quality of life. I believe we all know that our state has a very proud tradition in supporting education at all levels. And we continue, even today, in these dire times, to outperform many other states. But I think we are clearly slipping. In the past 30 years, In inflation-adjusted dollars, state support for the University of Minnesota has been essentially flat and clearly declining sharply in more recent years. In that particular time, if you think back on what has happened in higher education in the last 30 years, we've had a technological revolution, a lot of increased costs, and all of those have essentially been absorbed by increasing other sources of revenue and also using our resources much more prudently. At the same time, we have made, as I'll comment on in a few moments, some very significant gains in supporting students and supporting their cost of education. This particular slide gives you a sense of what the most recent impact has been of the downturn in the world economy, and obviously in Minnesota. This is the second significant deep reduction in the university state budget in my tenure as president. When I started, we took approximately a 15% reduction in state support, close to $185 million for the biennium. And you can see in this particular chart that we will reduce the university's resources by approximately $190 million for the biennium. And that is before the recently announced $36 million of an allotment by the governor. So this is a very deep cut if you look at the right-hand side of this chart. At the University of Minnesota campuses, we've decreased academic budgets by about 5.5%, administrative budgets by very close to 6%. That has meant very significant reductions in investment, reductions in the people who are employed at our institutions, and these cuts are really deep and they're very real. We've tried to anticipate these trends in some proactive strategies that we think will help preserve employment, preserve the quality of education for our students, and obviously moderate future workforce reductions. We've done so with your help and support by investing federal stimulus dollars. We rolled out pretty close to 2 years ago a voluntary retirement option that allowed us to creatively reduce our workforce by nearly 500 full-time equivalent positions and to take more of these cuts by attrition rather than layoffs, which was a very important priority. We froze compensation. We substantially restricted hiring. We have approximately 150 faculty lines that have turned over on University of Minnesota campuses, and those faculty lines have not been replaced. And we've undertaken some very important cost reduction strategies. We've reorganized campuses, extension offices through consolidation of departments, offices, functions. In short, we've done a good many things to adjust to these very difficult challenges. We're about halfway through the reduction in the university's workforce, despite increasing some federal support that I'm going to talk about in a few moments. We project over some period of time that we'll reduce the workforce by approximately 1,200 people. In addition, I mentioned we really made cost reduction a high priority. We've deferred investments in academic programs. We've reduced capital construction. We've canceled close to $150 to $200 million of projects that had been under various stages of planning. Reduced energy costs, maintenance costs, operational costs. We've tried to squeeze every dollar we possibly could out of the operating budgets of the University of Minnesota so that we could protect our faculty, staff, the quality of our academic programs, and especially protect our students. But there are very many consequences in what I'd call this new normal, very challenging economic environment, and it's becoming, as many of you might expect, very, very difficult to sustain the university's operations on a statewide basis. When we talk about the University of Minnesota and we come before this committee, it's natural for us to focus on the higher education budget. That is the largest budget we receive from the state of Minnesota. But I think it's important to point out to the committee that there are other aspects of the university budget that are very much adversely affected by the discussions we're having at the state capitol. Let me just share a couple of those with you. In recent days, you've been spending a lot of time looking at health care costs and health care cuts. And you might be somewhat surprised to know that those reductions hit the University of Minnesota in its academic programs in a very direct way. In the reductions to Merck, the direct cuts to the university clinical programs are about $3 million. That's a 33% reduction in support from that particular area. That affects directly School of Dentistry student clinics in the Twin Cities, Willmar and Hibbing. And I would argue these are exemplary programs, not just in Minnesota, but around the nation. It affects the Community University Healthcare Clinic, a clinic that serves low-income patients in South Minneapolis, and again, another exemplar of the university and also a national model for caring for the healthcare needs of low-income people in our community. It affects training programs at the University of Minnesota Clinics and the University of Minnesota Medical Center. It reduces funds to the area health education agencies on a statewide basis in Hibbing, Willmar, Fergus Falls, Crookston, and North Minneapolis. The cuts to educational programs at hospitals, clinics, pharmacies, nursing homes, and other sites also directly have impact on the training of our students. That's $19 million, close to a 35% cut in Merck funding to the University of Minnesota. It has adverse impact on the Fairview-affiliated training programs, Hennepin County Medical Center-affiliated training programs, Duluth-affiliated training programs, hundreds of other training sites in every county of Minnesota are affected by these reductions. So I want to point out that the proposed cuts in general assistance medical care and in low-income dental care programs threaten the viability of the very the healthcare science schools at the University of Minnesota, particularly dentistry and the medical school. So while we're here to talk about the impact of reductions in the higher education budget, I want to say that there's also a ripple effect when you touch other parts of the state budget in many of the other core functions of the university, and I would argue on many of the other essential services that our state needs to support. This next slide gives you a sense of what I've said just previously about the sort of flat line nature of appropriations over a period of nearly 15 years. And you can see these lines are relatively flat. It suggests that we've absorbed approximately $60 to $80 million of cost increases at the University of Minnesota on an annual basis through other than state support. And it also tracks some of the other reductions that I've indicated in a previous comment. In the past 10 years alone, the ratio of state appropriation to tuition revenue in the university's budget has fallen substantially. In 1997-98, when I joined the central administration of the University of Minnesota, the proportion was 71% state, 29% tuition. In the last couple of years, that has fallen to nearly 50-50. In 2007-08, it was 56% state support, 44% tuition. So you can see that this trend line in this next slide is increasingly a trend line that indicates that the support, the educational support or support for educational purposes at the University of Minnesota campuses will be increasingly reliant upon tuition revenue. And for the first time in modern history, at least, you'd have to go back to the 1800s to find a comparable example. I've done the history here. Tuition support will be more than $100 million more than state support in the University of Minnesota system. I mentioned the unallotment and the kind of impact we'll have there. Actually, the amount of tuition in next year's budget over state support will be close to $140 million. So that differential is very, very real and very substantial, and it's growing. You might ask, you know, where is the University of Minnesota with respect to other peer institutions when it comes to tuition revenue? If you take the Big Ten and the Twin Cities campus, we're about in the middle of the pack, and we could probe that a little more if you wish to do so. I will make this point repeatedly now and in my summary. that to maintain a very strong higher education system in Minnesota, we all have to do our part. We have to use our resources more prudently and more effectively. We have to be entrepreneurial and grow new sources of support. But we also need the state to be our steadfast partner now and in the foreseeable future. There is something called the Higher Education Opportunity Act, and it requires institutions like ours to report increases in cost, and particularly to report increases in net cost. In the past decade, it's no surprise, you've read this in the newspapers, tuition at the University of Minnesota and around the country, tuition levels have approximately doubled. But the total cost of attending the University of Minnesota has increased only 44% during this period. And I'm making this point with some degree of pride, because the members of our community and the university's Board of Regents have made affordability a first-ranked priority at the University of Minnesota. During this very challenging period, when we've had to handle two very draconian budget cuts, and the costs of education have obviously grown quite substantially, the net price increase for our students has been closer to 27% during this time period. I'm proud of the efforts the university has made to address these issues of long-term affordability for our students. I'm proud of the efforts we've made to keep room and board costs below the cost of the CPI or below the cost of inflation. I'm proud of the efforts we've made to keep higher education affordable despite these challenging circumstances, but I'm not sure we can keep on this track without your support and without the support of our state. Let me talk a little bit about higher education and affordability. It happens to be one of my own personal passions, and it has been, as I indicated, a long-term priority for the University of Minnesota. We could see some of these storm clouds developing in the U.S. economy, the flatlining of state support for the University of Minnesota, and we recognize that one of the possible solutions for us, and only one, was that we had to drastically and substantially increase scholarship support for our students. So basically, I went out and made hundreds of speeches. And it would be thousands of speeches if you added all of the leadership of the university, including our Board of Regents. And we looked people in the eye and we said it was time to give back, and give back so that young people would have the same opportunities to access the benefits of higher education that I enjoyed as a first-generation college graduate and many others have enjoyed in this room and in our state. We put together a matching scholarship program and successfully increased the rate of annual giving to scholarships during this period of time from 700 to 1,000% a year, and closed a $300 million private fundraising campaign. Part of that was leveraged through the stadium campaign. We never asked for a stadium gift without reminding people that it was important to give back to our academic mission. In fact, we nearly raised a dollar for dollar during that campaign for academic purposes. Undergraduate students at the University of Minnesota received last year $78 million in scholarship support, $10 million more than the combined federal and state totals. That, to me, is a phenomenal achievement. We could not have said that 8 to 10 years ago. In celebration of this groundbreaking commitment, particularly to lower-income students and middle-income students, we have now renamed our scholarship initiative the University of Minnesota Promise Scholarship, or the U Promise Scholarship. This is a scholarship program that I'll mention in just a moment that is available to students on every single campus of the University of Minnesota. This particular scholarship provides free tuition and fees for any student who is a Pell-eligible student under federal Pell-eligible eligibility regulations, and a graduated scholarship up to 125% of median income in Minnesota, which is approximately $100,000 per year. Give you a sense of how this worked this year, and I think you, as members of this committee, can take some pride in this particular chart. You could even, if you wish, Representative Rukavina, tell us you told us to do it, which would, I think, be partly true. With a family in the $40,000 to $60,000 range, with a $1,500 middle income scholarship that was inaugurated last year, close to $800 of Pell and state grant support, that is an increase in support, $420 that we use for the from the federal stimulus bill, students in this particular family income range actually had a nearly a $2,000 reduction in their tuition and fee costs at the University of Minnesota for approximately a reduction of 20%. Now, we obviously will not have the stimulus money next year, and so that particular scholarship benefit will not be available to students. But the point I really want to make here is we don't have any magic bullets here, but I think the solutions that we have to address for the long-term future of higher education obviously have to do with setting priorities, obviously have to do with using the resources we have much more prudently and effectively, but we also have to grow the money supply on behalf of our students and on behalf of our universities, not only from the state of Minnesota, but from other very important sources. This particular chart has a lot of numbers in it, but it gives you an indication of the number of students at each level at the University of Minnesota, the scholarship support we provide, the amount of income that's provided to students through university employment, and then the total resources that go in to support them. And you can see it is a very, very large number if you look at the lower right-hand section of this chart. Last year, the University of Minnesota provided $280 million in support to graduate and first professional students through scholarships, fellowships, research assistantships. Those largely come from federal grants, but other sources of research grant support and teaching assistantship. And the total amount of all financial assistance, as I indicated just a moment ago, was over $400 million, a 39, nearly 40% increase from fiscal year 2003, when this total was just under $290 million. In my judgment, it's a really good story, a story that was written in a particularly challenging time, and I'm just hopeful that we can keep this kind of momentum going and keep the doors of opportunity open for young people who are here with us today and need the kind of support and the benefits of higher education. This slide, this next one, shows the mix of our students. There are 67,000 students who attend University of Minnesota campuses. About 75% of them come from the state of Minnesota, and that trend line has been relatively steady on all the campuses of the University of Minnesota. It's a slightly lower percentage on the Twin Cities campus, but we've had a consistent level of state student participation on our campuses for pretty close to the last 10 to 20 years. This is also a period where we've really tried to look at the productivity profile of the University of Minnesota. We've more than doubled four-year graduation rates. They were too low. Our retention rates have stayed at or above 90%. Student satisfaction is at an all-time high. Applications for admission to the University of Minnesota campuses now approach 45,000 on an annual basis, 35,000 for the Twin Cities campus alone. And I think you can get a sense from these numbers that the education students receive on our campuses is an education that is of high quality and clearly quite valued by them and their parents. By focusing on productivity, increasing graduation rates, students will say to me, are you pushing us too fast? Does everybody have to graduate in 4 years? And my answer, of course, is no. But by making timely progress toward graduation, that's probably the most effective way to cut your costs. And it also provides the opportunity to serve more students, more transfer students, more freshmen, more lifelong learning students on the campuses of the University of Minnesota. This graph gives you the degree profile of the university, and there are some important points that I'd like to make. We grant about 14,000 degrees per year. That's up from about 10,500 in 2001. So one of the stories of the last decade is that the University of Minnesota campuses have substantially increased enrollment, particularly in fields that are vitally important to the future of our state. 40% of all the degrees in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics at the baccalaureate level are granted by the University of Minnesota campuses. That's 56% of them in natural resources and conservation, 85% of the baccalaureate degrees in engineering, and 97% of the baccalaureate degrees in agriculture. Over 40% of the degrees in these same fields at the master's degree level are granted by University of Minnesota campuses, including about 80% of the master's degrees in the biological sciences, over 80% of the degrees in engineering, close to 90% of the master's degrees in architecture, 100% of those in the physical sciences, and about 75% of the doctoral degrees. And most of these people who graduate from our campuses go into Minnesota industries, are granted by or conferred by University of Minnesota campuses. That's over 80% in computer science, 100% of the doctoral degrees in the physical sciences, 100% of all the doctoral degrees in engineering, 100% of the first professional degrees in dentistry, pharmacy, and veterinary medicine, about 85% of all first professional degrees in medicine. I often say in giving public remarks about the University of Minnesota, think about our healthcare system without having a strong University of Minnesota. I think it would be a shadow of what exists today, even with the problems and challenges we face. So the main point I want to make is that the University of Minnesota is a big part of the human capital needs of our state, and it will be long into the future. The other point I'd like to make is about another very critically important aspect of our mission, and that is how we leverage state support. You invest a dollar in us, and we go out and grow that dollar at least 3 to 4-fold through the other things that we do. And you can see in this particular chart that when it comes to research and development expenditures, most of which come from federal competitive grants and contracts, there has been a very steady increase during this period in the academic productivity of the University of Minnesota. The sponsored funding, it now exceeds, through competitive grants and contracts, the level of state support by a very considerable amount. It's approaching $700 million a year. And by any calculation, if you use the U.S. Department of Commerce statistics, this creates this economic activity by the University of Minnesota to support research and innovation supports about 25,000 jobs in Minnesota's private economy. You can't have a job strategy for the state of Minnesota without investing in the University of Minnesota. So we not only create jobs through this activity on our campuses, but we also create very considerable economic activity in the community. So there's an interesting book out that I plan to send to the committee on the power and the importance of supporting research universities in the global economy. And I will just at least venture this comment that I don't think Minnesota can be a top economy in the United States or around the world without keeping the University of Minnesota strong. So let me give you a few takeaways, and then I'd like to stand for your questions and certainly engage any of my colleagues. I want to make the point, as this first statement does, that the university is absolutely essential to the future of the state of Minnesota in terms of what we do to provide the state's human capital, advance innovation, economic growth, and quality of life. We have been a national leader in providing very creative, innovative financial support for students. And so while tuition rates have clearly climbed at the University of Minnesota and elsewhere, our actual costs have remained relatively affordable, especially for Minnesota students with financial need. We have made the students with financial need the top priority on campuses of the University of Minnesota. And the University of Minnesota Promise Scholarship, up to $100,000 of family income, now supports 13,000 students on campuses across the University of Minnesota. It hasn't been easy, but I think we have weathered these deep cuts creatively first in 2004 and 5 and again in 2009 and 10. But I'm not hanging crepe here today. I just want to tell you, I think we have reached our limit of our ability to make drastic cuts in the university's base budget without adversely affecting many other very important interests that this state has. Deeper cuts to the University of Minnesota cannot be passed on to students in today's economy, not the way I think they have been in past decades. We don't have the elasticity in tuition to raise tuition that we once had. There isn't the opportunity to make up for deep state cuts by just simply passing those costs on to others. So that means deeper and deeper cuts in your competitiveness, your muscle, your ability, that eventually will turn around to bite you in your ability to be competitive with respect to bringing other opportunities to the state of Minnesota. It's a recipe for lower quality, and it's clearly a recipe for lower competitiveness and lower levels of service. I'd like to argue we need a strong state partnership and strong state support. I think it's absolutely essential to maintaining the university's quality and its ability to deliver on its public responsibilities and mission. I fully realize you have a basketful of very difficult competing issues on your table: health care, K-12 education, issues related to the environment. And I'm not asking to put the university or Minsku or our private colleges at the top of a list for the highest priority funding, but if it's not in the state consciousness, if it's not in the state plan, if it isn't a state priority, I would predict we will go back to where we were in the 1950s. We were 29th in per capita income in 1959. 29th, not in the top 10. And the reason we're in the top 10 is people have the vision and the wisdom to invest in education. That's not coming just from me. That's coming from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. So this strong state partnership, strong state support, I think will be absolutely essential. We need a vision for higher education in Minnesota. We can't just keep drifting year to year, making these decisions on an ad hoc basis. I'm going to argue this spring the University of Minnesota needs a covenant with the state, one that lays out our mutual responsibilities and commitments. Finally, support for the University of Minnesota, in my judgment, is a support for the future of the state in terms of jobs, the growth of jobs, the growth of the economy, the development of human capital and workforce needs, the development of innovation and an innovation economy, the promotion of economic growth, and obviously the achievement of a greater quality of life for us all. Well, let me stop here. I think that's enough said on my part. I'd be happy to take your questions on anything I've said or any other issue you'd like to explore this afternoon.
Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. President. Everything you said about the role of the University of Minnesota and what you've done in the last decade to address the kinds of challenges the state has put before you makes complete sense to me, as does the need for a vision for higher education. But I would suggest we also have a need for a vision for the state of Minnesota. And you recognize that we have competing priorities. And given everything you said, how is it that you think we can honor this commitment to the partnership with the University of Minnesota and address our responsibility to address the $1.2 billion deficit we're facing this session and what we're facing coming into the next biennium?
Chair Rukavina, Representative Brainerd, I don't think there's a simple answer. There's not a single answer, certainly. You will not be able to lavish significant increases on the University of Minnesota in this kind of new normal, challenging economic environment. So we have to be part of the solution. We have to continue to keep finding ways to reduce the operating costs of the university, to increase the productivity of the university. So we have to do our part. I've said regularly to the members of our community that a lot of the responsibility for our future rests in our own hands. And so that to me is a bedrock principle. You can't always look to the state and somebody else to solve all of your problems. At the same time, I want public officials like the members of this committee, people who run for public office, to talk about why higher education is important to the state's future. When I was young, a high school education was the norm. When I grew a little older, about 25 to 30% of our fellow citizens attended our colleges and universities. And today, the new norm in the global economy is college readiness for all students who graduate from high school and probably some post-secondary attendance, and many, many more of them receiving, if we're going to be competitive in the world economy, a college degree. Minnesota can't survive economically without growing the skills of its workforce, without increasing the education of its fellow citizens on a lifetime basis, not just in the post-high school years. So I would like people to talk about that, and if it's a priority in the state, we will find a way to balance that priority with other competing needs. But if it's not on the screen, and I've seen increasingly higher education is not on the priority list of the people who run for office or talk about the future of our state, we will not make it enough of a priority to collectively find a way to work our way through these difficult issues and create the opportunity we need for our fellow citizens. I don't want to be known as a generation that pulled the ladder of opportunity up behind us. And I think there are solutions to these issues, but they're not single solutions. We have to be much more cost-conscious. I think the state has to be more steadfast and consistent in support of higher education and K-12 education. It can't be a trip to Valley Fair every year. It just doesn't work that way. We have to make sure that we together, if we're going to be in this new normal environment where public resources are contracting, you can't weather this and come out on the right side of the tunnel if you're not willing to set priorities. So we can't be equally strong in everything. We have to set priorities at the University of Minnesota. We've asked every unit at the University of Minnesota to tell us what should be strengthened, what should be maintained, what should be downsized, and what should be consolidated and downright eliminated. Every single unit, support unit and academic unit at the University of Minnesota is going through that process with a set of economic expectations for what they have to achieve in the process. But I think that's not something that should stop at the doors of the University of Minnesota. Can we support a higher education system like the one we have now? Or do we have to make some choices? Do we have to organize ourselves, design ourselves differently? Do we have to support things in a different way? I have opinions, obviously, but I think this is an issue that should not be left to professional educators like myself. This is a state interest, a compelling state interest, and I think we need to deal with all of these issues at the same time. But I would argue very strongly that a state budget that does not make higher education at least a priority with a longer-range vision of the future that we need to create together here is a deliberate decision to compromise our future, and I don't think we should be in that place. But I think it's a responsibility that we all share together.
Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. President. First, I wanted to make sure I noted that I think it went by pretty quick, your note about when they were raising money for that stadium, you were getting almost dollar for dollar.
Yes.
In academic stuff as well. And when I found that out this summer, maybe many of you knew that already, I was floored. That's top-notch work, and I appreciate that. I did want to talk just a second or two, though, about the tuition issues. I was looking at your chart number 6, and this is for the undergrads, obviously, and there's two questions I have for you. The first is, can you describe a little bit about what's happened to graduate tuition rates as a result of the funding levels that we've been sending your way over the last few years? And then secondly, the net price dollar is assuming a net price per year per student, and we've had some growth in the number of years it takes to get through between 4 and now moving towards 5. And I assume that has to do with fewer dollars means fewer classes. Classes means a little harder to get through. And if you could address those two issues, I'd appreciate it.
Chair Rukavina, Representative Obermuller, let me just make a couple of points. We have not made drastic reductions in class availability. In fact, in some cases, we've actually increased the availability of classes. We do have, I think, a challenge in K-12 significant, you know, in this kind of environment to consolidate our curriculum and make it more efficient and seamless for the students who attend our campuses, and our faculty are very busy at work on these particular issues. I may ask Dr. Zetterberg to join me here in just a moment, but one of the good news stories of places like the University of Minnesota is that we bring in a lot of support for our graduate students. And most graduate students either have a teaching assistantship or a research assistantship. If you have a half-time research assistantship at the University of Minnesota, you get free tuition and fees. If you have a quarter-time assistantship, that's about 10 hours a week, you get a half-price scholarship. And the one of the slides I put up for you shows the you know, more than $250 million of support that comes from all sources in this particular area. It's a great way for us to support our graduate and professional education. Where we have, I think, really serious, very serious challenges is in the professional degree programs. I'm not talking so much about the School of Business, you know, the Carlson School of Management at the Twin Cities campus, or the School of Business in Duluth. In many cases, they get some help from their employers for the cost of, let's say, a part-time or a full-time MBA program. But when it comes to medical school, you don't have time to work. You know, you're on what Frank Serra, our senior vice president, calls a forced march, and you just have to stay on track, and you have to take a pretty heavy load. And so in the areas of veterinary medicine, dentistry, pharmacy, and many of these professional fields, the debt loads are growing very, very substantially. It's not at all uncommon for a student graduating, let's say, from medical school, specializing in family practice, to have a debt load of $150,000 to $175,000, and some of that may be a carryover from the undergraduate years. Our undergraduate debt load is about midway through the Big Ten. We're sort of, but it's about $20,000. I worked for every dollar to support my education. I got to tell you, I'm concerned about debt loads for undergraduate students. But if they average about $18,000 to $20,000 a year, and you get a baccalaureate degree with all the benefits that come with the and the opportunities that creates for you, I'm not so disturbed about that. What I'm really disturbed about is young people making life and career choices on the basis of their debt, and particularly in this post-baccalaureate period when it comes to areas of medicine, law, and other areas of economic life. So I don't know if I hit all your questions. I think I came pretty close. Peter, did you want to add anything? Okay.
Thank you. Representative Downey. Representative Downey, did you have a hand up? Did you want to?
I did, yeah, thank you.
Are you going to hand
up? No, that's fine. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And
so I have the only copy?
Oh.
And you.
I passed it out once last year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Dr. Brunix. I guess maybe just as a preamble to a couple questions, I think at least I and I think all of us really appreciate the fortification of the University of Minnesota, and I personally, while it's a little bit controversial, really support the move to become, you know, a top five research institution, and understand the pain of getting from a general college environment to a really high-end undergrad and grad program across the university to kind of support that mission. So I like that. I appreciate that, and I think that's a huge contribution, and you've been a big part of that, so thank you. And I also, as you know, I've been pushing hard on some of the Board of Regent members to keep cost control and efficiency and optimization as part of the equation, as part of the stewardship of the university, kind of back to the state. So anyway, I appreciate your very strong comments about doing that. Two questions, though, come to mind, and one is we still have four times as many people applying as spots, and so clearly the value proposition of the University of Minnesota is awfully strong. And so maybe first question, I mean, why wouldn't we raise tuition even more? You know, where does tuition stand relative to other Big Ten universities? And is tuition, the cost of an education, really the problem, or is it something else?
Chair Rukavina, Representative Downey, I think that we're under the current budget plan, we're going to increase undergraduate tuition about 7.5%. At least that's the proposal I plan to take to the university's Board of Regents. I think in this kind of economic environment with real pressures on lending and pressures on families, we've got to be extraordinarily careful about raising tuition. I think there is some elasticity. We could increase it, but I think it needs to be nuanced and graduated over some period of time, and it needs to be accompanied with a very strong and aggressive financial aid model of the kind that I talked about. That's why we have made that such a high priority at the University of Minnesota. If tuition is going to be a bigger part of funding the long-term future of the university, we have to be one of the most adept institutions, one of the most creative institutions in keeping higher education affordable at the same time. So we are means testing some of our scholarship programs, obviously, but we're also attracting really high-level students. I think that's good for Minnesota. If a student leaves the state of Minnesota, three of our sons went off and studied someplace else for various reasons, and only one of them came back. When students leave the state of Minnesota, about half of them come back. If they stay and study in Minnesota, about 60-70% of them stay here. If people come from other parts of the country and study at the University of Minnesota, we have a shot at keeping about half of them in our state. That should be a part of the long-range human capital strategy of the state of Minnesota. So we think it's really important not to close our borders, but at least to make it more difficult for students to leave Minnesota by making the University of Minnesota a high-quality institution. And it's not about being elitist. We have as much of access, economic access, as we had before we closed General College. It's about deciding what's the role of the University of Minnesota in Minnesota's system of higher education, and leaving to others what they do better than, or at least as well as we could possibly do. So I think tuition is going to be the primary source of support for the University of Minnesota, and it will be for other institutions of higher education, public and private, in our state. But I think the real reason we need this public dialogue and this public debate is we need a long-term vision of where we want to go as a state, and we need a long-term vision of all the different tools and strategies we need to bring together to really make sure that we keep Minnesota as the brain power state in this country. We've always been at the top of the pack, or toward the top of the pack, in providing educational opportunity for our citizens. And if we want to be a world leader in the global economy, we're going to have to continue to do so. But it's going to take more than one strategy. A lot of places have gone down the road of trying to compete for the most qualified students or the students that have the highest test scores, and they put tons of money into financial aid packages for people who are already well advantaged by income. And we have merit-based scholarships at the University of Minnesota. Many of them come from private sources. But we've just made a deliberate decision, a policy decision, to make sure we have a balanced approach and we can keep higher education accessible and affordable to students. I'll just give you one statistic that I'm really kind of proud of, and some people might think it's an elitist statement, but when I started eight years ago as president, we had about 30 National Merit Scholarships and National Merit Scholars who attended the Twin Cities campus of the University of Minnesota. Now it's approaching 160, and most of those students are from Minnesota, and they would have gone someplace else. I think that's a good story, to keep the very best, the brightest, the most committed students in our state.
Excuse me, I don't know what this is all about.
Plenty. He's watching you on TV. It's the governor, isn't it?
It's somebody far more important than my governor. It's my much better half.
Okay. she's watching you on TV.
I don't know why that button went off. That fire alarm went off. I must have pushed the wrong button. Fitzenreiter once told me, when I got a new phone and I had a very obnoxious ring, that you can tell a lot about a person by the ring of their phone, and I'm hardly embarrassed with that. There we go. We got it off now.
That's good, because it keeps happening.
Yeah, good.
Why am I handed to this?
I'm technologically challenged.
So am I. Representative Downey, did you have a follow-up?
If I could.
Go ahead.
Chairman, thank you.
But before you do, Mr. President,
yes.
What type of role does the legislature have in deciding, to use your words, what the role of the university in higher education is in the state of Minnesota?
Well, Chair Rukavina, I think if you look at state statute, I think the state of Minnesota has done a particularly good job of laying out the expectations, the roles and responsibilities of the different systems of higher education in our state. I think we're blessed to have the kind of range of options we have here. Now the question I think we have to ask ourselves is, do we have sort of the right mix? Do we have the right organization to get the job done? Do we have to have as many places as we now do? I know that's very painful to raise. But if the economy is growing and the budgets are growing, you don't have to ask these questions. But if you're downsizing budgets by 10 to 20% a year, you know, or by the biennium, I think you got to ask these questions. You know, in the global economy, with the power of the internet, are there better, more creative ways that we can do our work and network the resources we have in the state of Minnesota? Many of those are painful discussions, but I think the state statutory framework for higher education is probably pretty sound in Minnesota, and we have an incredible range of academic resources. I think I happen to take a lot of pride in the community college system in Minnesota. I think they do a good job, and you know, I think we have a range of options for students. But I think we need a, you know, K-12 education is the only statutory responsibility in Minnesota's constitution. And in this century, I think we need to extend the reach of that statutory. I'm not asking that we change the Constitution. I have a few thoughts about how we might do that, but I think that's beyond the scope of this session. But I do think we ought to consider the importance and the power and the benefits of higher education in the same way that our forebears thought about the benefits and the importance and the transformative power of elementary education, elementary and secondary education around World War II, and then in the post-World War II period, the importance of higher education. The best single thing we've ever done in this country, in my judgment, on the human capital side, was the GI Bill and the National Defense Education Act that literally open the doors of opportunity to millions and millions of young people and working adults. And we need to be thinking that way. But I do think we're going to have to roll up our sleeves and determine whether we can do it better. I think we also have to increase our investment and make sure we get a real good return on that investment. And I think we're going to have to ask our fellow citizens to join with us in making the tax system in Minnesota more responsive and more creative.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You essentially asked my question. I think Dr. Bruin.
Representative Reiner.
Go ahead. Well, I really appreciate those comments, and I think you know, pruning the tree in an effective way here is going to be critical. And it sounds to me like you are thinking, and maybe even the board is thinking, maybe even have some concrete ideas and new models that you're contemplating. I don't know what the right approach is for a legislative committee like this or the chair to be part of that, but I think that would be really helpful for us. We're all thinking about how we make things better and consolidate and make them more strategic. So anyway, to the extent that we can be involved, I'd appreciate even an extra degree of information, visibility into what's going on.
Sure.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Chair. President Bruce, first of all, I thank you. That was a very good point, and I'm interested in seeing where that conversation goes. I think Minnesotans still think of Minnesota as an education state, and I'm not sure that's a reality that we have in the 21st century, and we have to start confronting perceptions versus realities. I want to bring us back to tuition, and you mentioned the elasticity of tuition. And I appreciate you putting slide number 5 in your presentation. As I've talked to students, especially over the last couple of weeks, it's a point that I keep bringing up because I don't think many folks are aware that we've crossed that line. And we knew, this committee knew we were going to in 2010. I mean, I vividly remember the hearing when that was told to us. And it wasn't something I was particularly excited about seeing happen. But I would like you to talk just for a moment about what's going to happen next year and the year after. You know, the governor had his press conference and essentially said, I wish I could have cut higher education more. But we have stimulus dollars and strings attached to that. And, of course, those stimulus dollars are gone next year. The strings are gone next year. And I'm especially concerned about this cliff in tuition that we're going to fall off in a year. And I'd be appreciative of your thoughts.
President. And Roger, excuse me, Representative Reiner.
Chair,
we put in statute last year, you know, that language for both Minsky and the university that the reports were due, I believe, on March 15th on what the Board of Regents in this particular case was going to do to respond to what's going to happen in the next biennium. So I'm assuming Mr. Fitzenritter is getting that prepared for us, and maybe you can just touch on where you're at and what you're thinking.
Representative Reiner and Chair Rukavina, we don't have all of the details of the next biennial budget worked out yet. We're obviously struggling quite frantically to get FY11 done. In fact, I leave here and I consult with the faculty on the next year's budget, and I can assure you I'll have a hotter time at that meeting than I'm having at this one. People are deeply worried about where all of this is going and the kind of impact that it'll have on their work and other aspects of the university's mission. What I worry about, now just this is an editorial side, then I'd like to get to the next biennium. I worry that this state has taken 160 years to build the University of Minnesota into one of the top universities in the world. It's not the top, but it's in there. You know, you've got thousands of research universities around the world, and we're in the top 30. We're in the top 9 universities in terms of productivity on research, the public universities. We've had the highest growth rate in terms of attracting outside money, or among the top 3 universities in attracting outside money in the last several years. So you've got a treasure here, and it's not about being arrogant. It's a fact. We ought to appreciate the facts that are before us and do what we can to keep it. What I worry about with these trend lines is this darker line indicates the level of state support for everything we do. The preparation of the health workforce in Minnesota that I talked about. The maintenance of the capital infrastructure of the university, the ability to compete for outside money that creates this 25,000, the 25,000 jobs in the state of Minnesota. Just take the University of Minnesota Duluth for just a moment. The University of Minnesota Duluth is the second most successful student or university in attracting outside money for grants and contracts to support research. And it's 4 times the aggregate total of all the other public and private institutions in the state. 98% of the money that comes into higher education support research comes to the University of Minnesota. That's a huge competitive edge for this state. It attracts places like Coloplast from Denmark to the state of Minnesota. And the CEO said, we're here because of Mayo and the University of Minnesota. So I think that's a really important thing to keep our eye on. And tuition can increasingly support the cost of education, but these other things that are so critical, I mean, where's the next discovery like taconite going to come from? Or xylogen, you know, which has been one of the world-beating drugs, you know, to fight AIDS around the world. Where's that stuff going to come from? The kind of miraculous discoveries that had to do with transplantation surgery that occurred here at the University of Minnesota. The work that's going on in Karen Asher's laboratory on defeating Alzheimer's, the ravages of Alzheimer's, or the work that's going on to really find a cure for diabetes. One of the top places in the world confronting 10% of the healthcare budget in the United States, which is associated with diabetes, is right here at the University of Minnesota. And don't think for a moment that other places around the country aren't looking at that and saying, wouldn't it be great if we could take this whole laboratory of the Schultz, you know, Family Institute and just take it and move it to the University of Chicago or move it someplace else? You can move whole laboratories and buy innovation in higher education the same way you can in the private sector. So we got to fight to keep our edge. And it's not just your fight, it's my fight, it's the fight of the university community. In terms of the next biennium, I don't know what the solution is. We know that you're not going to be able to print a lot of money to help us out. We know that there are definite limits to what we can pass on to students and families, and so we're working with a formula that will probably balance that budget about 65% in terms of cost containment, cost reductions, other tough-minded decisions we have to make, and we think that we have to model, in modeling this budget, we have to find 35% of the solution through new revenues. Obviously, tuition will be a big part of that, but we're looking at other things as well. We think we can grow a lot of part-time enrollment, but that takes some time to ramp up. We've already increased enrollment quite substantially in the last decade, and there are other things we can do. But I would also urge that the state of Minnesota step back for a moment and see if we have the revenue mix right, see if there are other things that we can do. I don't think we can cut our way into a more creative future. I think it's going to take a much more balanced approach.
Representative, do you have a follow-up or are you done?
Yeah, just a comment, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think of, as President Brunix knows, I graduated from the U with my undergrad, and the mistake I made at 20 years old was I didn't walk for graduation.
Well, we can invite you back, Ruth. He can correct that.
Thank you, Mr. President.
But I think only take a donation.
It's now more a credit than you paid the entire semester.
Exactly, so. Yeah. But, you know, Mr. Chairman, President Brunix, I think of the inscription on the front of Northrop Auditorium, and it seems very informative to me as we have this conversation. It says, founded in faith that people are enabled by understanding, dedicated to the advancement of learning and search for truth, devoted to the instruction of youth and the welfare of the state. And it seems to me that's the conversation we're trying to have as we think about how we move forward.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A UMD graduate.
Yes, I'm very proud of it. President Brunix, on last year we made the change on decreasing the tuition for non-resident, non-reciprocity students. And the goal was kind of to try and see if we could boost those numbers in enrollment. Have you seen an increase in that? You know, have you done any projections? What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, Chair Rukavina, Representative Anderson. Yes, it has had an impact. The rationale for doing that, actually, we've had a little criticism in the newspaper and letters to the editor. The rationale for lowering non-reciprocity out-of-state tuition was to make the university a much more competitive place for people from other parts of the world. And one of the major changes is we've doubled the proportion of undergraduate international students, which I think has really improved, not just at the Twin Cities, but all across the state has really improved the mix of students, you know, and the variety of students, and really improved education. When we made that change, we made that change to lower the tuition down to a level that we considered the full cost of instruction based on our analysis. So students coming, let's say, from Missouri to the University of Minnesota or California, those students are paying the full cost of instruction. We're not cross-subsidizing them by lowering their tuition. The other thing that has happened and will happen increasingly is that the students, I don't think this is going to displace Minnesota students. The percentage of Minnesota residents attending our campuses has stayed relatively constant and relatively the same with this change. I think, though, as our demography declines somewhat, we may pick up more students from out of state. That may change a little bit in the next few years. But I think the biggest change will be that we will attract more students from non-reciprocity states. We now, at the Twin Cities campus, or in the last few years, about 18% of our students came from Wisconsin. So that may go down somewhat, and representation from other parts of the country may actually go up. I think that's good for the state of Minnesota. I think it's good for our campuses. But I don't think this is going to have any adverse effect on the opportunity for Minnesota residents to attend our campuses.
Representative Mahoney. Or were you done? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. President, maybe you remember my question last year about relevance versus the state, and you were exceedingly diplomatic in your answer. I'm going to ask it a little different this year. Could you give me the total, give us the total budget of the University of Minnesota, including what the students are charged for tuition, the budget for buildings, all the grants that you get, all the costs of your operations and maintenance of your facility. In other words, how many dollars and cents do you spend at the university every year, or every biennium? And then the second half of that question is, what does the state allot to you?
Okay.
President Boone.
And I'll do the math, and I won't have to be diplomatic.
Okay. Chair Rukavina, Representative Mahoney, I believe, Fitz and Ryder can correct me, but I believe the overall all-funds budget is just shy of $3 billion a year. It's about $2.7, $2.8 billion. About $2.2 or $2.3, somewhere in that range, would be in tuition, close to $700 million. State support, about $592. Sponsored funding, which would be, it's getting pretty close to $700 million. So it's interesting to me that tuition and sponsored funds that we generate through our support actually both exceed. Yeah.
I'm not interested. I would believe that your fundraising for your scholarships is not part of what the state gives allots to you. So
no.
What I'm hearing is that it's a $700 million out of a $3 billion budget.
Actually, the state's contribution is with the unallotment, the $36 million hit that we just recently took, going into the next fiscal year, the state will provide $592 million to the University of Minnesota against an all funds budget of pretty close to $3 billion.
But I think close, Mr. President, and correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Mahoney, you're asking, okay. So then how much is coming from the LCCMR and how much is coming from tobacco settlement money? Are you asking that comes from other parts of the state budget or just that's a general fund budget number that you just gave?
The 592 is state specials.
Sitting on the LCMR, I can tell you that the University of Minnesota gets a lot of money from the LCMR every year. I don't know what they get from the tobacco settlement money, is that what you were asking? All the money coming from the state?
I'll reframe it.
Yeah.
And what are the funds that come from the state of the almost $3 billion budget? Because what I'm trying to get to is, last year the question was, when does the state become irrelevant in your funding? You were exceedingly diplomatic. Certain point. I'm just trying to figure out around the diplomacy.
So, Mr. Fitzenritter, welcome to the committee. You would just want to say your name before you start talking. We all know who you are.
And then, my name is Richard Fitzenritter, the Chief Financial Officer at the University of Minnesota. We get, in the current fiscal year, let's just talk the current fiscal year, $623 million. That, of course, will drop to $591. We hope it doesn't drop that far. But we
general
get $623
fund.
General fund. Then we get $22 million a year tobacco money. We get $2.5 million from the MinCare account that's appropriated through your bill. All three of those are. Offhand, the LCMR money, which are typically more often than not capital projects, I don't have an exact number there. I can get that for you. But those are the three most relevant pieces.
And then the state grant program, how much money do you think comes to your students?
$30 million,
yep.
And then there, of course, we do, I get you this number as well, we do have grant contract activities with state government.
And then, Mr. Fitzenritter, debt service on your buildings and plus the, debt service and then HEPR money every year, see?
That's correct.
And what would that be? 40,
well,
30?
Well, of course, you get, Mr. Chairman, members, on average, because of course you do a bonding bill every other year.
He doesn't know. Excuse me, I was.
You do a bonding bill, Mr. Chairman, of course, typically every other year. And
you're a pretty good chunk of it.
Yeah, well, $100 million is in the bonding bill looks like in the conference committee this year.
And what's the, what would be the average? This year, is, since you're using this year as an average, what's the debt service that we're paying on all of your capital projects that
Mr.
you...
Mr. Chairman, I would not have that figure in my hand.
But we can get it for you.
Right now.
Yes.
Honestly, I don't know.
How about just the stadium? You know that one.
About...
Mr. Chairman, please don't bring up this, the stadium.
About 10 million.
I have such great memories of that.
So... I mean, so there are other funds that yeah. we pay is the point, you know. And I don't know if that's what you were trying to get at.
Actually, Mr. Chair, you brought up a good point, Mr. Fitzgerald. Could you get me the I think you understand what I'm looking for. What does the state, what funds from the state flow to the University of Minnesota system in its entirety? And what are the funds that takes the university to operate in its entirety? Because basically what I want to find out is, and actually I'd like to find out what it was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and now.
Yep.
So I could see what our dollar figure or what our percentage of help to the university was a decade ago, where we were at the middle of the decade, and where we are today. Because I strongly suspect we used to be 40-50%, and today yep. we may be at 15-20%. I don't know that.
Yep.
So I would like to have those figures if I could.
Sure.
Chairman, I'd be happy to go
okay.
over
that. Yeah. Thank you. And Mr. President, yeah. before we run out of time yeah. here, I really do want you to tell us, or Mr. Fitzenritter, I mean, you touched on it. You had, because of the stimulus package and what we did, knowing what was coming and looming, you had early retirement incentives for 500 FTEs, you said. And you have not replaced 150 faculty.
And
you mentioned that 1,200, I didn't catch it. You were kind of talking as fast as us Rangers do. but you mentioned 1,200 people less than, and you didn't mention what kind of a time period. Is that over the last decade that you've...
No. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, in the budget that we presented to the Board of Regents last spring, we predicted as a result of the cuts in the current fiscal year that we would be down about 1,200 employees. We spent about half of the stimulus money on financial aid buy down per your instruction, mm-hmm. and the other half was used, roughly the other half was used in order to bridge some of those cuts to try to keep employees employed through the end of the biennium.
Okay.
We did an early retirement program where we got about 500 folks, and we're down year over year right now about 500 employees.
And
we expect the rest to come out as the stimulus money comes to an end.
And what would a $36 million reduction mean through the next end of this biennium, and then an 86, I believe it is, annually after that mean as far as reductions
in workforce?
Faculty and administration and the groundskeepers and everything else. Do you know either
yeah,
of you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think just a rule of thumb is for every $1 million of support, we'd have to reduce FTEs at the university by about 16 to 17. So we use 17 as the general estimate. And so if it's $100 million, we're going to reduce 1,700 people in the workforce unless we can find the money someplace else.
And, you know, I understand the tough financial situation we're in, members, but, you know, Governor Plenty is always talking about creating jobs, and I think all of us have to realize what these cuts and unallotments mean in losing jobs. These cuts and unallotments mean in losing jobs. And they're not just jobs in the public sector yeah. either. They're jobs that rip through the economy.
Okay, if you wouldn't mind my embellishing your statements. I'm always reluctant to do so, but...
I embellish all the time. Go ahead.
You embellish mine, but I don't usually return the favor. But anyway, when we had the first big reduction in the university's budget, we had had a trend line of increasing grant and contract support for research that had been going up year to year about 4-5%. And when we took that $185 million out, we actually went down in competitive grants and contracts, and it took two, three years to regain it. And I don't know exactly where those lines cross, But I can tell you, if you just keep cutting and keep cutting, you will not be competitive, because your very best people will find another place to work. About 10% of the people at the University of Minnesota, 10% of the faculty and research staff are responsible for about 80-90% of that $650 to $700 million. So those people are the Kevin Garnetts of academia, and everybody wants to recruit them.
You left the state, don't you?
I know. That's the reason I use the example. I don't want to see that happen to some of our very best. So I know you can't make University of Minnesota the number one priority for everything. That's not the point I'm trying to make. I think we have a responsibility to use our resources well and to do our part to deal with this kind of challenging environment that we're in.
President Brunick, what can these kids sitting up here, and geez, I've got them trained on. Well, there's only one with a blazer, with the maroon blazer. I've told them that they shouldn't let you dress them, so I've
you must admit it's the most handsome coat in the audience.
But what kind of debt can these students carry before it's too much for them to carry? And what kind of debt load, what's the debt load increase for your average four-year graduate degree at the university in the latter 5 years since we started cutting? Let's go back to 2003.
I could ask, you have those numbers, Peter, but I don't think it's gone up very substantially due to the increase in financial aid and scholarships, but I think it very well could if these trend lines continue. But I think Peter might have more accurate.
Mr. Stetterberg, do you have that right off the top? You're good. You probably have it right off the top of your head.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for the record, Peter Zetterberg, University of Minnesota. The most recent comparison numbers I have for the university, the loan indebtedness of baccalaureate graduates in 2008 was $22,000, and about 65% of the graduates had that level of loan indebtedness. Nationally, looking at all four-year public campuses, the loan indebtedness figure was $21,000. And again, 65% of all graduates had it. So we are still very near to what the average is nationally.
So has that figure jumped in?
Yes. Back early in the decade, it was probably around $14,000.
10 years ago.
It's jumping faster than the inflation.
Right. I can't tell you, however, that in fiscal 2009, the borrowing at the university leveled off very decidedly, and it's clear that students and families are being very careful about how much they borrow.
And Mr. President Brunick, you mentioned the 7.5% figure. Is that after you are buying down these Minnesota resident scholarships with the middle income and the Iron Range and everything else?
No, it's the agreement we struck with the committee and with the legislature last year is to get it down to 4.5%. And so the stimulus dollars will buy it down to 4.5%.
Was that 7.5% figure for the next biennium or for next year?
No, that's for next year, but we're going to discount it for Minnesota residents per our agreement.
That 400 and something we had in the bill?
Right.
So then it's not 7.5%, it's
no, it's 4.5%, but it would be 7.5% for Wisconsin reciprocity students.
And it will be for our students, too, come, and then on top of that, whatever you have to do to run the university with our cuts, if there are cuts, come 2011 and 12.
Yes, there are some real challenges in 11 and 12. The one thing I will say, we use federal stimulus money to introduce the middle income scholarship program, and we have a commitment to find a way to fund that going forward. So that will be a part of mitigating these impacts on students in the years ahead. But it is still going to be challenging in 2011, 2012, because the students who had this, I'll call it stimulus scholarships, may lose some of that money. The good news is, if you look at that middle income chart, though, the students at the lower and middle income levels who attended University of Minnesota campuses this last year with the federal stimulus money and the middle income scholarships, University of Minnesota Promise Scholarship, really had a net reduction in tuition, and in some cases pretty substantial one. I think that was a good thing, particularly in this tough economic environment, and that may have had something to do with leveling off these loan levels that Dr. Zetterberg talked to you about just a moment ago.
President Brunick, do the student, the undergraduate students, these folks up here in the audience, do they subsidize the research aspect of the university at all? Is there tuition?
Chair Rukumina, I don't think there's any subsidy of the research mission, except to this extent that when you pay a faculty member, some portion of the faculty member's salary comes from research. But if that faculty member is doing sponsored research funding, they also have part of their salary on a grant or a contract. The faculty teach, they do research, they do public service. But we tuition dollars do not subsidize the research mission of the University of Minnesota, but state support provides some of that subsidy, and obviously we gather some of that through indirect costs or overhead rates as well.
Mr. Fitzenberg,
Mr. Chairman, that point. Members, you'll recall, I know you hear a lot, but last year I made a lengthy presentation to remind the committee that we attribute the tuition income from a student right to the college where they are either enrolled or right where the instruction occurs. It's all attributed. So a student in CLA taking a course in CLA, 100% of their tuition goes to CLA.
So give us an example now, the quarter of $1 billion that you got a few years ago for your research buildings, the four research buildings. How do you assign that debt service, which obviously you pay a third through the university and the students, so how do you assign that to that?
That's not assigned to...
On that one, they didn't pay a third, but on most,
no,
they did.
Yeah.
I tried to make them pay a third, but I lost that.
Mr. Chairman, members, the budget model, the budget system at the university directly attributes the debt service and the building operating costs to the occupants of the facility. So if it's a research facility occupied by the medical school, which in the case of the biomed, it is largely occupied by the medical school, they pay the debt service and the building operating costs. It's attributed directly to them. The choice we then have to make is whether we're going to give additional state support or we're going to require them to spend other resources to pay those bills. But we do not take CLA tuition income and pay the bills for the medical school.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I won't take a lot of time because we're just about up here, but I think picking apart some of these numbers is important. I know you mentioned an $80 million per year projected cut out in the next biennium, and I assume that that's after you kind of unwind the unallotment. We go back up, and so I think people need to realize that these are not all kind of additive and consecutive cuts as we describe them, and even with everything that's...
Representative Downey, wait a second now. You've got a $12.3 million cut that we made in 08 in that 1812 bill, then you got a $20 million cut that the governor unallotted in December of 08, then you got the $30 million cut that we had to compromise with the Senate on our conference committee bill because they used the stimulus money a little differently K-12 spending, then you got the $36 million being proposed right now, and then the $50 million unallotment added to that, and that is all, correct me if I'm wrong, finance advisor, but that's cumulative, and that is, you add it all up, and that's what they're getting cut every year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, out into the next biennium, some things reset. That was my only point, and I'll make one final comment, and that's just that in 2006, the state funded the University of Minnesota at $591 million. So, I mean, to think that we are somehow inordinately gouging the University of Minnesota, I think everybody in this room probably, if they looked at their own balance sheet and their own personal incomes, would be quite pleased to be at 2006 levels. And so anyway, I just think a more detailed discussion about the financial picture and the history and where we're at and where they're at would be really helpful, and blanket statements that we're somehow not honoring the state's mission to the land grant institution component of the university might not be entirely fair, and I think warrants a little more deeper dive into the numbers. So
Mr. Representative Downey and members, I'm going to have a hard time making any cuts, because we've cut, and we cut back in 03, I think, when, I don't know if Representative Nornes was chair then or Representative Stang, but I think it was the biggest, or one of the biggest cuts in the nation, and then we barely got back up. Yeah. Well, you, Stang did it, right? You didn't do it, good. And, you know, and now we're probably back to that level again. So, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I'm probably going to ask the real question. I'll have to ask the President to stick around after this. But, Representative Downing, you know what? We have, without question, abandoned our commitment to a two-thirds of the cost of the University of Minnesota and the land-grant university. And to say anything different is a complete, I can't use the word on tape, but it is totally wrong. And I will say it this way from my 22-year-old daughter who just graduated from the University of Minnesota and will spend the next 15 to 20 years paying off the loans that she took. Even with the dollar figures that I gave to her and her mother gave to her, is an abomination of what the state has always stood for since the World War II vets came home. So, wow. You know, we can argue this anytime, any place you want. But and I'll promise you I will be civil.
But we are why I'm starting now. You know, we have a tough job, and we had a way to balance it last year, and yeah, we were using one-time money from the federal government, and we were using we were doing a third cuts, and we were supposed to do a third increase. And now we are here with a $1.2 billion plus deficit again, Representative Downey, and there's no proposal to use a one-third balance again. And we should be looking at that, I think. I am going to come forward. I don't want to cut. I'm going to come forward with a bill that's going to make some cuts, but it's going to raise some revenue, and you people can all vote against me. I don't care, but I'm done cutting. You cut. It's your buddy that wants to cut. You want to cut, you vote to cut. I'm not, I hope to see all of you, and Nornes ran out of the room now, you vote to cut, because you want to make the cuts, and I don't want to make it all in cuts. So I guess my question to you is, when our bill comes here and it's not all cuts, will you move to change it to be all cuts? Because I don't want to make it at all in cuts. I want to raise a little bit of revenue. I don't want those students up there to be more than $22,000 in debt when they were $14,000 in debt in 2003 or 4, or whatever Mr. Zetterberg said. So I'm just telling you all that. And I don't know if I got the votes on my own side to raise a little bit of money. I hope I do. We'll see.
You have to behave nicely.
I love you. Okay, Representative Blaine.
I just wanted to underscore, Mr. President, thank you, Chair Rukavina, a couple of things that you said. You said you don't want to be the last generation to lift up the ladder of opportunity, and I think that's really important. And, it also asks us to step back and take a longer view of things, and I think over the last 10 years we've had these arguments about how government's too big and it does, you know, we have to cut back and not spend so much money. And we do have to be careful with the taxpayers' money. I don't deny that. But what the university invests in, what the state has been investing in all the areas that you alluded to, transportation, healthcare, all of these things, they support the middle class. They support a strong middle class, and we're losing our middle class. And if we continue to argue that we can't sustain this kind of funding and we can't invest in these things that make the middle class possible, then we're admitting that we can't sustain our middle class. And it worries me greatly that that's the direction that we're heading in. So I applaud you for making those statements.
Thank you.
Mr. And I'm going to have Representative Anderson back clean up and go ahead. And then, but just a reminder before we leave, I'm going to approve the minutes, or Representative Slocum. Would you like to move the minutes of the February 23rd meeting?
I move we approve the
Thank
minutes.
Thank you. Any additions or corrections? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. And before we move on, Mr. Fitzenberry, you'll get us then your entire plan for what's going to happen should we have more cuts and what's looming out there by March 15th, right? We'll be getting that from you as we put, right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So can you just review for us what next week will look like? Are we going to be hearing your cut bill that you're going to be bringing forward then to
not,
address
not
your
yet.
Idea of your targets? Or I know last, I think it was
target in the room right now is me for you.
Well, I know that earlier this week, I think you had mentioned that next March, you know, beginning the first week of March, that you would have targets. Is that?
Not yet.
Okay.
You know. Okay. We're going to have Minskew here on Tuesday, and then I think we're going to actually, are we starting to hear some bills on Thursday? Yeah. We're going to start to hear some bills that may be deed bills and things like that. Representative Anseltz has a bill, and I don't know, Representative Mahoney doesn't.
Well, Mr. Chair, is there anything I can do to help facilitate in getting those targets? Is a call to the speaker, or just, I know,
you
as we
discussed.
You can
come and give me some counseling, and I need it, as you can tell. I need it, because I'm torn as to what, you know, what compromise means. And I'm willing to compromise. I'm willing to look at, I don't know if I'm willing to cut $36 million more dollars from the University of Minnesota. Maybe there's a better number. I don't know if I can cut 10 and a half. One thing I do know is I am very, very disturbed about the $42 or $43 million in the state grant program that's going to be gone next year that nobody's talking about. And I intend to try to find money to replace that, because nobody's talking about it, and these students, many of them are going to lose up to $1,900, we heard last week, or Tuesday. So I am looking at that. I'm willing to make some cuts to compromise in our overall target, be it Deed or the university or Minskew, but nobody's talking about the $43 million or the $6 million more that the governor is taking out of the state grant program, $5 million of which I'm extremely puzzled about because of the governor, you know, always emphasizing how important work is and people shouldn't be on welfare and they should work. And so we put more money in the work-study program, and some of the students depend on that are up there and all over the state, and that's $5 million of the $6 million, and I don't want to do that. I just can't do it. I can't do it. You can do it. You vote to do it. If Representative Murphy or Representative Reiner or Mahoney or Bly want to do it, they can do it too, but I can't do it. So come to my office, tell me what you want to do, counsel me. I wasn't able to give you that Christmas present last December, which I wanted to. I wanted to be here fighting for these students, but I wasn't able to do that.
Mr. Chair, there's not enough time in the world to counsel you. I apologize.
I was hoping that would be the answer. She's publicly stated she can't advise me anymore. Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.